And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Happy Super Bowl Sunday, Connor. I am sure that we'll get into your hot Super Bowl takes by the end of the pod at least, but I hope you are doing well. Right off the bat, Connor, how can winning 6 out of 8 possible points last week still feel like a loss?
I know, right? I guess it all depends on how you feel with the last two games, which I'm sure we're definitely going to get into because it was, I don't know if it was a reality check or sobering or whatever you want to call it, but it was frustrating, at least for most Habs fans. But, you know, I guess, yeah, that's a positive way to think about it, but it was, I'm going to stick with frustrating because that's how I felt, and I'm sure that's how most Habs fans felt watching those last two games against the Senators, but, you know, we'll get into that. It is Super Bowl Sunday, so it's a big sports day. It's weird that there's no Habs afternoon game, I'm going to say it. You know, it's been sort of a tradition for so long, and it feels kind of weird. I don't know what I'm going to do leading up to the game, as I'm so used to having a Habs game to sort of talk about or, you know, watch and tweet about and talk with my friends about that's not happening this year.
Well, you'll just start cooking a little earlier, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I got to get all those yummy treats in for the Super Bowl. It's going to be good.
What is your go-to Super Bowl snack?
Oof. I mean, obviously this year's a bit different. Normally, usually we gather a bunch of my friends or sometimes with my family. I think chicken wings are usually a staple. Probably most times I'd have chicken wings. I mean, I'm a chip guy, so there's always chips. But yeah, like this year, me and my wife are making some chicken wings and some pigs in a blanket. And to feel not so guilty, you're making a bit of, you know, veggies and dip as well. So, yeah, I'm excited. It'll be fun. But yeah, chicken wings are my go-to. I love those chicken wings.
Cool. Yeah, you? We just talked about we're going to go skiing for a couple hours today and then hit the grocery store. And we were just talking about, like, what everybody wanted to have, you know, in lieu of dinner. We'll just sort of, like, snack all day from 4 yeah. o'clock to whenever the kids go to bed. But, yeah, chicken wings are definitely on the menu. I think nachos, if you can mm-hmm. get – I'm a double-layer cheese nacho kind of guy. And then I really like the sour cream –
yes.
Spicy salsa kind of like dip. But yes, of course, because we have kids and we have to model good behavior, we are going to have a veggie plate with some onion dip, I think. And then, my wife is super, like, uber health. Like, her favorite meal would be tofu, brown rice, and, like, some sort of kale concoction, maybe if she's like going wild with some sweet potato on the side. Like, that's her number one. But she looked at me and she said, "We need to get some chips for the game." And I was like, "Giddy up, let's do it. One bag per quarter. Let's make that happen."
There you go.
you are a bigger football fan than I am. I think it's just fair to say. I love watching in person, and I was lucky enough when we lived in D.C. to be able to go to some game. My brothers and I went to a Seattle Seahawks game a few years ago. We did the University of Washington, Washington State University.
Oh, wow, that must have been awesome.
They call it the Apple Cup. Yeah. That was fun. We went to that, and then the next day we went to the Seahawks game, and that was super fun. But in general, I just find all the pageantry to be a little wild. And this year especially, I am slightly concerned. Here in Vermont, we finally seem to be back on the right track around the COVID spread. And it seems like any time we have these holidays, you know, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or Super Bowl Sunday, which is obviously a massive day here in the U.S., I just get worried about super spreader things. So obviously we're taking it nice and chill. Snacks, TV, kids, and the only thing that I need to happen today is for Tom Brady not to win.
I know where you're parking your car, obviously. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into our Super Bowl takes later.
But yeah,
let's wait for them. I'm sure they're desperate to hear the day after what we thought was going to happen the day before. But tell me what you saw this week. You know, from the top, we had a back-to-back against Vancouver. Vancouver is a very strange team. has enough pieces that you would have thought would be doing a little better, but tends to fall apart whenever there's offensive pressure. That was certainly the case in Montreal for the back-to-back this week. What did you see?
Well, just the Canadians kind of continuing to run roughshod over the Canucks. It just seems, for whatever reason, the Canadians have their number. I think people were expecting a bit more out of Vancouver, to your point. You know, based especially how they played in the bubble, and I guess a bit last year in general. I think they're very, it seems like their defense is a bit in shambles, and they seem to be missing, I guess, the steadying force of Jacob Markstrom, who's in Calgary now. You know, I guess they thought Braden Holtby would be able to be sort of like the Jake Allen to Thatcher Demko, to sort of give him a little veteran, you know, sort of have this 1A, 1B thing split, but it doesn't seem to be working that well since both goalies are struggling pretty yeah. mightily. It's a weird anomaly. It's one of those crazy things, you know. I don't know what to take of it, but I mean, I'm obviously, you know, it looks good when Montreal's beating up on Vancouver, who I guess, you know, you have to say through the first quarter of the season, it roughly is one of the worst teams. So, yeah, I don't know. It's good. Obviously, like you said, so it's the Canadians kind of pumping in the goals and looking dominant. So, you know, yeah, you kind of just sort of, I guess I was just a little, you know, not concerned, but, you know, you figure maybe Vancouver after that stretch where Montreal took it to them in Vancouver a couple weeks ago, we're going to kind of look for payback, and it didn't seem to happen, as for some reason Montreal in the second period against Vancouver just loves to explode and put games kind of away. So, you know. But, yeah, it was good to see. It was sort of good to see they could keep that momentum going that they had built up until we got to Thursday, obviously, where, yeah. I don't know. How did you see the game?
Well, in terms of the Vancouver games, I just, you know, I love seeing Suzuki get off to such a strong start. I mm-hmm. am continually impressed by Jeff Petrie. I always think I should take him in my hockey pool, and I never do. And he just scores. Like, that guy just scores, and he's so good on defense as well. I know a lot of people are talking about, like, you know, it's early in the season, but potential Norris contention. I just am so impressed by him, and then obviously Toffoli, you know, we're running up the score already, but for Toffoli to score yet again against Vancouver, I think that's the thing about Vancouver, is like the off-season stuff, losing Markstrom and then having Toffoli emerge as the, you know, early goal-scoring leader in the league. I just think it's just, I feel a little bit for that fan base. It is. I don't know how much time you spent in Vancouver, but my brother lives out there. I obviously did my PhD work out in Simon Fraser University, so I have some Vancouver connections. But it is a little bit of weird fan base. It's not. I wouldn't call it a rabid fan base, but they do seem to have expectations, and by all accounts, the GM is in trouble out there. And I just don't think, I mean, they lost again last night and looked really bad doing it. This is a Habs podcast, so obviously we can't focus on every sort of team in the league, let alone the division. But I feel a little bit for that fan base who are having certainly a tough time. Despite, you know, you look at that roster and you're like, there are a lot of good players here. But as you say, they just seem to fall apart when there's offensive pressure, and Montreal, at least earlier this week, had a ton of offensive pressure. The Ottawa game, I mean, if we take two at a time, the Ottawa games, I honestly feel like the Canadiens got outplayed 4 out of 6 periods, those two games. And I'm certainly happy that, you know, Josh Anderson got the winning goal yesterday, but you know, that 3-2 score on Thursday really belies. I know that they had a great third period, but they looked flat. They had no energy. They had no forecheck. There were a lot of weird puck bounces, I thought. Like, they just, nothing was happening. And I know, you know, we both sort of said it. It felt like 2 years ago. It really did. And it just felt like they had no answers. And then I sort of thought to myself, well, Saturday's going to be a big test, because they really didn't look good on Thursday. They now know what the center team can bring. They're not to be taken lightly. And I still felt like, even though they looked a little better, they didn't have a good answer for Ottawa's pressure.
Yeah, it was odd. I mean, everyone was kind of worried about the Ottawa Senators just because they're obviously one of the worst teams in the league. Just, I'm not trying to, you know, this isn't me taking a shot. It's sort of what everyone has been saying about the Senators. They have a young team. There's some promising pieces, but obviously they're working to the future, right? So I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to take a swipe or anything like that, and based on their record. But I think fans are a little bit weary because of how the Canadiens last year struggled against the league worst Detroit Red Wings, couldn't beat them, kept finding ways to lose, you know, kept sort of looking, I don't know, disinterested. And that's the game on Thursday especially, I found the Habs were, it felt like a game that would have felt more at home at the beginning of the season. The Habs were, everything was just off. Passes weren't crisp, they were missing each other, or they were, you know, everything was just a, seemed like a struggle. And I guess you can say it's fair for a team to sort of hit one of those, you know, every team's going to hit one of those kind of bad game walls, you know, especially in a, in the way the schedule is this year where, you know, you're playing freaking almost every other night, right? So it still doesn't mean it's fun to watch as a fan, especially when you see, like, you know, Ottawa getting destroyed by, like, Edmonton and, you know, Matt Murray can't make a save for the, you know, or both Ottawa goalies couldn't make a save for anything the last week before, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's making some, I'm not going to say overly challenging saves. That was one of the things that kind of got on under my skin, is like, okay, Murray was playing well, but the Canadiens weren't making it hard on him at all. I found they were very, like, you know, Brendan Gallagher's first goal on Thursday was a rebound in front of the net, and I found like they weren't able to get into the net and get to the front of the net into those areas where Matt Murray was making the save but giving up rebounds that were, you know, to be had. And, you know, to sort of piggyback off that, on the Saturday game, where, like you said, Josh Anderson got the game winner off of two rebounds because Matt Murray couldn't corral the puck. So, but in that Thursday game, just, I'm sure everyone watching just sort of, you know, as a fan, was just super frustrated. And, like, I guess the other thing, another thing obviously, is there's this online, right? There's this back and forth between Habs fans and Leaf fans about, you know, Leaf fans are feeling all a bit jealous, I guess, because people were kind of talking up the Habs as a very good team, and all of a sudden a lot of people on Twitter are feeling a bit threatened for it for some reason. I don't know. It was just kind of funny. So there's all these that now, you know, Habs fans are always giving it to them that the Senators beat the Leafs. Well, now the Senators have beat the Habs, so it's just one of those weird anomalies in a season. The game on Thursday was much more frustrating. The game on Saturday was, I agree, a bit better, but still, like, it was played at the Senators' pace, which I think is something that kind of frustrated me to watch, as Montreal clearly top to bottom has the better team. And they seem comfortable playing in these, Montreal's like dumping and chasing and turning the puck over, and, like, you know, it just seemed like, again, a little disinterested. And, like, Ottawa was able to sort of lull Montreal to sleep and sort of not be as aggressive as they were, you know, earlier in the season. And it was, you know, I kind of said last night after, even though they won, it felt like a win that felt like a loss because, you know, they didn't look that great. I mean, a win's a win no matter what, but it just, it felt annoying and frustrating to watch the Canadiens sort of struggle against this team that is not very good after looking so good the weeks before.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess if you wanted to flip it around, you'd say, well, think about last year against Detroit when, you know, definitely the worst team in the league, and Montreal did not play well against Detroit at all. And I guess you could say, well, you know, here's the worst team in the league, and at least Montreal can eke out a victory. I just think there's something, the thing that worries me is that there seems to be something wrong with how they approach the game, especially the Saturday game. Like, you just played them. You know what they're going to bring. Why is it that we don't have a better approach to the game? And actually, I thought, I was actually curious about whether the dump and chase game would work a little bit more, because I thought, well, maybe if they get pucks behind, then they don't have to worry about those weird broken plays that in the neutral zone that seem to be, like, really hemming them in. But that, as you say, that didn't work either. And so I just wonder, whatever was working for them the first, you know, 2-3 weeks just doesn't seem to be firing against the Senators, and that makes me wonder if they are, the Canadiens as a team are susceptible to tactics changes, which really sort of, poke a hole in their offense. The other thing I think we need to say about yesterday was Jake Allen was absolutely phenomenal. And, mm-hmm. talk about smart decisions in terms of picking up a veteran goaltender that on any other team, you know, would be a contender for number one, you have, and I actually now believe the thing that I've been talking about for a couple of years now, the idea of Price being able to play less games. This is two Saturday games in a row he didn't play. Now, in fairness, you know, yesterday was an afternoon game, and so, and obviously there's no fans in the stadium, so it's not the pressure in terms of fans seeing their star goalie in net is reduced. But I don't remember a time when the Canadiens were as willing to let Carey Price take some time off. And it really, I think, speaks to the potential for, I'm not saying 1A, 1B in terms of Price Allen, but like 1A, 1C or so. You know what I mean? Like, we're not talking about someone that only comes in every five games or when the number one goalie is injured. We're talking about somebody that's going to regularly see ice time and at this point has better numbers than Carey Price.
Yeah, it was a very shrewd move, I think. It's something that obviously people have been kind of talking about for a while with Carey Price, always, and getting him a decent backup who can play games, and Allen is way better than a decent backup. So yeah, I think also, I mean, the season, the schedule, the way it works out, it also sort of necessitates the fact you have to use these guys way more often, because as I mentioned, in most weeks they're playing every other day. Rarely do you get, you know, 2 days off in a row. So it's good to have that kind of guy. I know what you're saying, 1A, not quite 1B, but, you know, it's not going to be, Carey Price isn't going to be playing 80% of the games. It's probably going to be more something like 60-40 or even 55-45, something like that, which in the long run will be good because that means Carey Price should be fresh for the playoffs when he's going to have to play most nights, or all nights, you know. And I think it's good to have, and yeah, I mean, it should be good. Obviously, we don't want to start this whole goalie controversy thing, which people are kind of, you know, Brendan Kelly, our friend, had an article about Carey Price being inconsistent again. And so, you know, people like to stir that pot because it's Montreal and people need stuff to talk about. And, you know, one bad, or, you know, you argue the game against Ottawa that they lost, you know, the goals, a couple of the goals maybe should have been saved, but that's going to happen in general for all goalies in all seasons and all games. So, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, it was a very good move to get a guy like Jake Allen, especially because, you know, not that he's experienced as a backup, but he does have experience winning a Stanley Cup. And he very clearly understands that his role is to, as he puts it, help Carey Price be better. So that, you know, it's good that he's comfortable with his role. He knows he's, you know, he's not trying to jockey for more minutes or anything like that. He knows what his role is. And it's worked out very well for the Canadiens, as you put it. I mean, he has better numbers than Carey Price for now. And, you know, it's going to be a good thing in the long run, because even if Carey Price hits a bit of a, even if he struggles a bit, they have a guy they can count on, clearly, who can play. So it's a very smart move by Mark Bergevin.
Yeah, shout out to Brendan Kelly, columnist from the Montreal Gazette. I always love to see when older journalists embrace clickbait culture, because he does seem to find whatever potential pressure point there might be, which are going to, like, enrage half the fan base, and he just, like, pushes right down on there.
And I don't know if you saw, he also had a thing where he was talking about the PK Weber trade, which is like his, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like the hill he's dying on. And I'm not saying, again, one way or the other, he just says, you know, Nashville had more, and it was just, you know, he just likes to get people pissed off, and people always fall for it and click on his articles. He gets the views, and I don't even know if he believes this stuff as much.
No.
And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but it's,
Outrage culture is definitely a thing. And speaking of outrages, we had another Canadian player get hit in the head yesterday. No call.
Yep.
I hear there's going to be no review. And I just have to ask myself, what is the point of the Department of Player Safety? Like, what is the point of it if they're not going to review obvious hits to the head? And, you know, I saw it. Arpan Basu, the Athletic in Montreal, you know, tweet out the rule of the headshots. And I tweeted at him and I was just like, the rule doesn't matter if it's not enforced. If you're not going to have people who are going to enforce it, you can write whatever you want in the rule book. But this is sort of like criminology 101. We have lots of rules. The ones that matter are the ones that get enforced. And you have to ask yourself, why do they get enforced in some cases and not others? It's starting to look like a pattern. And, you know, obviously this is a Habs podcast and we pay attention to the Habs. I'm sure if we talk to, you know, St. Louis Blues fans or Avalanche fans, they could point out two or three examples where there was a questionable hit that wasn't reviewed. But this is like every week now. We are seeing hits to the head. And I don't, it's really frustrating to me. It's a problem, Connor. I mean, I think it's a legitimate, serious problem that has to be, considered. What's your take?
Well, it feels like the Department of Player Safety is an optics thing right now. It looks good that they have it, but as you said, if they're not going to enforce the rules or if they're not going to take these things seriously, it's going to keep happening. And, you know, unfortunately, we've talked about it, you know, something... It's going to take something, I think, catastrophic for them to sort of realize, holy crap, we have to change something. Kind of like, you know, the dirty plays and, you know, like the Matt Cooks and those kind of players who are kind of getting skating by and then some bad stuff had to happen kind of all in a row for them to be like, okay, we need to start taking some of this stuff seriously. You know, it almost feels like something like that has to happen again, which is unfortunate. And you don't want it to get there, but, you know, history has shown us that the NHL... more so than I think other leagues is a very reactive and not proactive. So instead of trying to address the issue before it becomes a bigger issue than it already is, they're just going to let it go until, you know, someone, you know, for lack of a better term, gets their head knocked off and it's going to be a big star player and they're going to be out. And I mean, you could say it happened to Sidney Crosby, but I wouldn't argue that the hits that he took where he got concussed were overt, like he got hit in the head, but I wouldn't say they were overly dirty or, you know, but this, I mean, that started this conversation, right? And they kind of wanted to sort of do something with the headshots, but, you know, like most things, they kind of do this half measure because they want to keep violence in the game. I was kind of talking with someone on Twitter about fighting and he was saying, well, they don't call these and they don't, the Department of Player Safety doesn't suspend people, so they got to fight. I'm like, how is fighting a guy who got a concussion? You know, if you got a guy who gets hit to the head and they don't do, player safety doesn't do anything about it, then you got to fight and take a punch to the face. How is that, you know, helping concussion problems? I mean, it also doesn't deter any of this stuff because it's still going on. You can talk about fighting and policing the sport and all that crap, but it doesn't do anything, especially when, you know, a fight is staged. It's like, you know, these two kind of guys are like, okay, I guess we're going to fight now. Anyway, I'm kind of getting on a sidetrack, but like, you know, it feels very back to the Department of Player Safety and to your point about enforcing the rules. It's again, I think it's who they put in charge. They have someone who is a player and a player who, and you would think, considering he, George Parros, had a situation where, granted, he wasn't hit in the head, but he smacked his head off the ice and people thought he might have been dead, would sort of take these things a little bit more seriously because your head is very sensitive. And I understand people like to talk about how Gudbranson is bigger than Jake Evans and that's why he got hit in the head. I'm like, but to me, the onus has to be on the hitter. I know you can't play him soft because he's smaller than you. I get that. But if your elbow, even if you're not trying to, you know, chicken wing him or whatever, if your shoulder's going to line up in his head, you might have to take another line to make sure you hit him without knocking his head. It's that simple. And to your point about Arpin Basso, I think he was even sort of posting about how the IIHF reviews it, and it's way more cut and dry. Like we talked about before, there's too much gray area in the NHL rules to make it, well, I don't know, intent. Did he lift his arm? Did he lift his shoulder? Was he going through? You know, there's all this too many gray areas in a sport that is way too fast to sort of judge all these things in a split second. And if you're not going to sort of do a review thing, which we talked about in the past, you just make it black and white. If there is a hit to the head, there is a penalty. That's it.
And we know that works.
Right? I don't know why.
We have examples, whether it's high sticks, whether it's like we have examples of just making it cut and dry where that works. And look, don't get me wrong. I am not opposed to the physical side of hockey. I do not think we ought to take body checking out of the game. There is nothing wrong with a shoulder-to-shoulder body check or even a shoulder-to-sternum body check. That's part of the game. But what I don't understand is, again and again, we are seeing players getting hit clearly in the face and head, and there's no call on the ice, and there's no review. And all that tells your players is that that's okay. That's what we can do.
That's it.
Like, so I just, sorry, just to go on a little bit of a tangent. I think it was Thursday's game, Romanoff gave Shabbat a really solid hit. But it was a totally...
I think it was Saturday.
Yeah. Okay, it was a totally clean,
doesn't matter.
Good, solid hit. No one is saying that we shouldn't do those hits, right? But the reaction on the ice, immediately someone like stepped in and started roughing Romanoff up. And Montreal Canadiens got a power play out of it. But like, maybe the only answer now is that, you know, you have somebody in your lineup, and I don't really know, other than Weber, who on the team, maybe Edmondson, I guess, can play this role, who, if that happens, he's immediately going over and knocking the guy to the ice and saying, don't touch my players like that. But, like, that to me seems like a pretty inelegant solution, that you have to rely upon a tough guy retaliation, basically, in order to keep the peace. And I just feel like if that approach was going to work, it would have worked by now. And it doesn't. It really doesn't.
But that's even... Well, I'm just sort of... That's what it was sort of back in the 80s and 90s, right? That you'd hit a player. Or, you know, even Gretzky, when he would start in the league, he had Dave Semenko on his line. You know, protecting your players isn't going to go away. And like, even if it's a clean hit on a star player, you're still going to sort of jump into defend. So I get it on one level. I do kind of think it annoying and stupid that anytime there's a clean hit, something has to come out of it just because it's a big hit. But... You know, then that's going to lead back, and I'm not trying to... It's going to lead back to, like, an enforcer-style player who... He's on the team, and if someone gets out of line, he's got to go rough him up. The thing is, you know, those enforcer guys don't end up roughing up the guy who made the hit. They end up roughing up the other fighting guy. And I know Edmondson fought Tyler Myers the other... You know, last couple weeks ago after the hit on Armia, but it just... Again, it doesn't... I still think it doesn't solve anything. No one's going to, like... What dirty rat player stopped playing like a dirty rat after someone tried to hit them, fight them? Like, it never stopped Ken Linsman, it never stopped Claude Lemieux, it never stopped Brendan Gallagher, Thomas Plekanec, Brad Marchand. None of those guys stopped being the rats and, you know, players that, I'm not saying they're all dirty, but they play, some of them are dirty, some of them play on the line, you know what I mean? Corey Perry's another guy in the past was like that. It doesn't stop them from playing the way they play. And that's the thing I get annoyed at when people talk about fighting and policing. It doesn't stop anything. People like it because they like fighting, and that's it. And I don't know that it stops anything. And if anything, if you're going to be fighting more, there's going to be more hits to the head. It's just going to make the head injury issue worse to me. I think it's sort of this weird, like, we got to stop headshots in hockey, so let them fight. Like, it just, to me in my head, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you know? I just...
Okay, we're not going to hit him in the head with my elbow. I'm going to punch him in the face.
We're going to have to just keep an eye on this, I think. And I just think, you know, we have to watch the Department of Player Safety because they're not really doing their job right now. And I think it's something that's worth revisiting. Obviously, we've seen 3 hits to the head so far in this young season for the Montreal Canadiens. And I have to believe that there are other... games in which this is happening, and you know, if the NHL wants to get serious about it, they're going to need to get whether it's a rule change, whether it's enforcement of the existing rules, I don't know, but something has to change, because this is the kind of thing that you are going to lose support. People are not going to want to pay attention to a game. Parents are not going to want to show their kids games where stuff like that happens as a regular course. Because what that bleeds down to junior hockey, and now you got 13-year-olds trying to take people's heads off because that's what they watched on Hockey Night in Canada the night before, and it's not going to work. We got to fix it. Period. All right, let's talk about this from hits to the head. Let's go talk about the other major concern in hockey right now, and that's COVID. The NHL came out with an amended schedule to basically address what has been a series of postponements, particularly in the East, but also other places as well. The sheer number of players with COVID basically mean the team gets shut down. We've seen that not just on players on the ice, but also coaches. I have a couple points here. I want to get your reflections. I think there's 2 things worth thinking about. The first is the North hasn't had this happen yet. And as critical as I've been about Ontario, Quebec, and British Columbia in terms of how they're handling COVID. I think that's just a function of there being less of the virus in the community, which means that community spread can be somewhat limited. And because you have a testing regime that really helps you identify early players that may have been exposed, and then you can curtail it quickly. The problem in the U.S. is basically, I mean, there's two problems. First of all, you've got the highest risk group for spreading the disease, who also happen to be high-paid superstars, in areas where there is a ton of community spread. And we saw the NHL get tough with the Capitals around Ovechkin and a few teammates.
Kuznetsov.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was Samsonov maybe too, and Orlov, was it?
No, it was Kuznetsov. Yeah, and there was one other guy I can't remember, but yeah, they all got suspended, which I think is good because, yeah, you break the rules, you got to pay the price.
I just think that this, in many ways, was a foregone conclusion, and I just want to get your take about what danger does this pose to actually getting through a 56-game season? Because the challenge here is that you're going to have players basically playing every other day. I know Montreal has a week off coming up, but basically we're looking at every other day, and they've had no games postponed. So we're going to have a lot more back-to-backs, especially in the U.S., among the three divisions there. But any reflections you have on COVID for us being able to get through this season intact?
I think the season's going to go forward. I think, you know, the COVID situation is unavoidable. If you look at all the other sports, baseball, when they came back, had a real tough time at the beginning, especially. They had to cancel a bunch of games because I think it was Philadelphia. The Phillies had a big problem. And anyway, there was a couple of teams that had really big problems. They had to postpone and cancel games. It happened in the NFL where they had to play with the schedule because of a COVID outbreak on teams. So, unfortunately, it's going to happen. I mean, you want people to be very responsible, but it's hard to tell a 20-something with a lot of money in a town where you can actually go and do something to not do anything. It sounds stupid, but it's easy to sort of sit back here and not remember what it was like to be a 21-year-old to want to go do stuff, and then to top that off to have a significant amount of money in your bank to go and do stuff. So I, you know, it's easy to sort of tell people to what do you want to call it? Like the bubble in the playoffs, right? It's a shorter period of time. It's going to happen. Just you hope it doesn't really get worse than it already is. It's gotten pretty bad. I think it's Colorado, Buffalo, the Devils, and the Wild all had serious outbreaks kind of very recently. I don't know what you can do about it other than what they're already doing. If players aren't going to be responsible, and I mean, you can get, the thing is, you know, getting COVID is like can also be a very fluky thing. I mean, I know of people who've gotten it who are doing all the right things and, you know, don't go out, just go out to get groceries, wear masks, stay far apart, you know, and people have still gotten it. It's like, so it's tricky. It's not going to, I think they're going to go ahead. All the other leagues went ahead, even though they had all their problems with COVID. So I don't think the NHL is going to stop unless it gets way out of hand. It is what it is. It's just they, you know.
So you think that we're going to get 56?
I wish there was a better way to do it.
I mean, I don't doubt that the season's going to go ahead. I think the people are way too invested at this point.
It's tough because then what do you do, right? If let's say Colorado only plays, you know, let's say 48 games, versus then it's going to not be about your record or points. It's going to be a winning percentage. That's the only thing they're going to have to figure out is how you're going to make it equal for all teams if some teams get their games canceled. And I made an offhand joke about this, I think, last week. You know, is the NHL going to start embracing doubleheaders to kind of get all the games in? But, you know, they're going to have to figure something out. I guess maybe I don't know how other teams' sort of schedules work, but if they have one of those weeks where they have a week off, kind of, then I guess you can fit the games in there. They're going to have to figure it out because, yeah, it's going to be weird if, you know, if you're Colorado and you have a better winning percentage than another team in your division, but you played, let's say, 7 less games and don't have it, you know, you don't have as many points. How are they going to rectify that? I don't know.
And I
mean, if let's say like everyone in, I guess it all depends on the division too, right? I mean, if everyone in the Canadian, you know, like all Canada division plays all their games, it doesn't matter. But if you're in a division where, like I said, if you know, Phoenix or Arizona plays all their games and the Avalanche play 48. They're gonna have to figure something out, and I think they're gonna try their best to get all the games in, because that seems like a mess they don't want to have to deal with at the end of the year.
It's definitely gonna be a scheduling challenge. There's no question about that.
Yes.
So the other thing I think it's worth following up on is we talked a little bit about Mete, who got in to the Vancouver games last week. And then probably was sad again, and Julien made the point that he really liked his top six on the D side, and he wanted to give them some time to sort of get a little more secure. I did think Romanov played a little worse for having been sat. I don't know if those things are correlated or if he just had a couple bad games, but he looked a little less strong, I thought. What's the future for Victor Mete and Montreal?
I don't know. They're going to probably have to move on from him if he wants to play. He didn't, like Victor Mete, he said he played against the Canucks. He played all right. I wouldn't say didn't necessarily stand out in a overly positive way. He struggled a bit in his own end, which is kind of par for the course for him. You know, I don't think he's better than anyone on the Canadiens top six. So he doesn't, you know, he shouldn't play unless he has to. And I don't think it's bad to get him in a game here and there just to sort of keep him fresh, or whoever the extra defenseman is, to keep them fresh. As for Romanov, I'm with you. Against Ottawa, he looked off. Maybe he didn't like, maybe because he got sad, I don't know. You know, sometimes even though it's just to sort of say, listen, I want to get this guy in, it's something personal, or just he's a kid, he maybe, it did sort of screw with his confidence a little bit, but he looked a little, to your point, he looked a little less strong, but also I feel like he was trying to force play a bit. He wanted to sort of, you know, you get in that mode where you're overly trying to impress and trying to make a big play, and a lot of it didn't really work, and he was kind of turning the puck over a lot, especially the game on Thursday, I found. So hopefully he just sort of corrects himself, and maybe it was just a little of those blips. Like, you know, it's his rookie year, and it's a lot of hockey they've played in the first little while here, so maybe it's just like the team. He's just been off. Like, the team was off, hopefully, against the Senators this past week. But yeah, I think I see all this stuff about Victor Mete going to Calgary for Sam Bennett, which I think is kind of funny.
I will take that trade right now, okay?
Oh, exactly, right? I mean, I know everyone's like, well, they have the same agent. They both want to trade. I'm like, okay, take Victor Mete, and I will take... I mean, I'm not saying Sam Bennett is like a... he has, apparently, he should have way more, but, you know, he should be... he has more potential, I would think, based on what we've seen him, how we've seen him play in his junior career and things like that, but... yeah, we'll take a guess, you know, Sam Bennett for Victor Mete all day. So, I don't know. I don't think the return's going to be very much. I think sometimes you see people getting overly attached to players on, you know, fans of a team will get overly attached and overvalue players on their team. And I think people are kind of overvaluing Victor Mete based on, you know, again, what I see on Twitter.
I see a pick for Mete. And the Canadiens are just too deep, I think. And he's not going to be able to get play time, and he's just not going to be happy sitting in the box. And I think the Mete experiment, you know, there is value in having a puck-moving defenseman. He does things that other Ds don't do. I think that argument was a lot stronger when you didn't have number one players in the roster right now that can move the puck, and players coming who are better, just straight up better than Mete. So I just don't see... I mean, I know you got, last week we talked about maybe another, you know, depth defenseman who, you know, same age or older or whatever, but I, at this point I would be surprised if he wasn't moved for a pick, if Bergevin could find the right situation. In terms of Bennett, I mean, look, he's a useful player, but we're not hurting on the wing. Like, who are you going to move out to move Bennett in?
No.
Right now, you know, we are stacked, I really feel like. I mean, if the Canadiens were going to make a move for, you know, I don't know, a face-off specialist or something at the trade deadline, or, you know, some other piece that was going to help them get through, I just don't... this is not a team that I think has a bunch of holes. The question is, can they continue to play as well as they have? One last question for you, Connor, before we turn to the games next week. Cole Caulfield has been lighting it up, and I heard talk, including your best friend, Pierre McGuire, say that Caulfield was bound for the NHL maybe as soon as this season. Any hot takes on whether we're going to see Cole Caulfield this year in a Montreal Canadiens jersey?
I doubt it, unless Montreal is very comfortable at the end of the year and they want to bring him in for a couple of, you know, late season games to sort of test the waters. I don't see it. Just to your point, they're too deep on the wings right now. They have, where, who's he going to play over? You're not going to play him over in the top two lines. So, and that's where he should play. So, you know, it would be nice, and it's great to see he's tearing it up, and it's good to see that he's coming. And, you know, maybe, you know, if they end up losing Thomas Tatar via free agency and have a young guy like Caulfield, who obviously won't be able to, you don't presume will be able to step in and fill those shoes, but to have that same kind of scoring touch coming is very promising. And I just don't think this year, if Montreal is still sort of playing the way they've been playing lately, you know, it would be hard, I think, to sort of find a spot to sort of stick him in.
Just one quick point. Think there is a chance that they do what they did with Poehling. I know this is not the same player, but I could see him suiting up for, you know, the last game of the regular season or some situation like that. Canadians are already
nothing to play for.
And just to give him the experience and also to give the fan base, passing the torch and all that other nonsense. Yeah. I do think he is an exciting player to watch. And I know he's tiny, but the way that he shoots the puck, how he sees the ice, he's going to be a really fun player to watch. And you think about him playing with a Nick Suzuki or a Jonathan Drouin or even a Romanov, having that sort of offensive sensibility, it's certainly exciting.
Yeah, I agree. If it's like I said, the end of the year and there's nothing to play for, I think he'll get a little taste. Give him a little, give the fans a little treat, the reason to watch if the games are sort of meaningless. I think everyone's excited at, you know, seeing the way he's scoring and performing in Wisconsin. It's good. It's even more hope for the future, which is good. So just sort of pivot off of Caulfield, another sort of interesting lineup question coming for the Canadiens for these games this week is the return of Yoel Armia, and who's going to be coming in and out. Who's going to be coming out for him? You know, because Corey Perry, who replaced him, has not looked bad. He's looked quite good. The thing is now they've got to figure out who they're going to pull out for Armia, and that's another question facing the team this week. So it'll be something definitely to keep an eye on. I don't know if you have any thoughts on who might come out.
I don't have any hot takes in terms of it's weird to think about messing with a lineup that's looked this good. I do think Armia has earned his spot in terms of, but I that's an interesting question, and it's not one that I had thought of. The last I heard, he had flu-like symptoms, so he hadn't been practicing. But I think you're right that we might see him back in the lineup later this week. So let's think about this next week to come, and then I want some hot takes from you, like three hot takes for the week to come. All right, so. Wednesday, we have Toronto at home. Thursday, Edmonton at home. Saturday, Toronto away. I'm excited to see Toronto again after not seeing them since the first game of the season. For me, it's about a series of tests for Montreal. And even though it was ugly yesterday, they passed the test because they won the game against the Senators, who they had not looked good against on Thursday. Toronto is definitely a different team. If you're talking about the best teams in the North, Toronto has to be in the conversation. They're not a perfect team by any means, but if Anderson plays well, if their D doesn't let them down, they are potent on the power play, and they have so much talent in that top six that you have to be concerned.
Yeah, I mean, as much as there's, you know, this rivalry with Toronto and you want to say that they suck and all that stuff, you have to appreciate the fact that, yes, it is a good team. They definitely have the horses, the elite talent with Matthews and Marner, and even though I don't think he's playing overly exceptional, John Tavares and even William Nylander, these guys are, and Morgan Riley, these guys are very good players. And so, you know, you can't – obviously, I don't think the Canadians are going to take them lightly, but it should be a good entertaining game like the first game of the season. Hopefully, the Canadians can lock things down a bit better. One little trend I've noticed with the Habs is their third periods have been kind of – they've had a tough time keeping a clean third period this season. So that's just one thing to sort of clean up, I think, in general, because I think almost in most games they've given up at least one goal every third period except for – I think the games against Ottawa. So just one of those little things I've sort of noticed. We kind of talked about it a bit when they kind of let up, even though they've been up big, they've given up third period goals. So hopefully that, you know, keep an eye on that. And again, you mentioned it with Toronto, stay out of the box. No stupid penalties. You know, last on Saturday afternoon, we saw Ben Trott take two stupid penalties late in the game to give life to Ottawa. Or not life, but give them a chance. You can't take stupid penalties like that against Toronto. They're just too potent on the power play. So it'll be fun. And like you said, it's a good test. It's a good measuring stick game, you know, to get back, you know, to get a better feeling around the team. Even though, like you said, you know, they won on Saturday. It was not – Montreal fans were not necessarily happy with how that game looked. So it would be nice to see them get a couple of big wins this week against two of the – I mean, you know, Toronto, again, is probably – with Montreal, the two best teams in the division, and then Edmonton, who is kind of middling, but still, obviously, you can't take them lightly with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right? They're going to see, you know, they're probably going to see the two best forwards in, you could argue, in hockey, but, you know, clearly the two best forwards in the division this week. So it'll be a good test, and I think, you know, the Canadians, for whatever reason, seem to be able to rise up and play good against better teams. It's just sort of been their thing, and so let's hope they keep it going. And I think, like you said, it's going to be fun, and it'll probably tell us a bit more about this team, you know, now that we're kind of getting a bit more settled into the season.
All right, so some hot takes from me, and then we'll hear some of yours. Price is going to look like the Price that we need him to be to make a deep run when he plays Toronto on Wednesday and Saturday. Allen will win against Edmonton on Thursday. That's hot take number one. You want to go, or do you want me to keep going?
You're going to go? Yeah, I'll go. So I have a hot take. I think I think Josh Anderson, this hot take, is going to be — he had that big goal. He's been on fire for the Canadiens in general. I think he's going to keep going, and I think he's going to get at least one goal in every game this week.
I love that, because he's on my fantasy team, so I'm way in on that.
There you go.
Hot take number two: Thomas Tatar will score two goals this week, and he's going to put his sort of slow last couple games behind him. Played really well.
Yeah, it's good. I think I have another, because I mean, I don't know how you feel about Philip Deneau, but I think he's kind of been not at his best. And I don't necessarily see that changing. I know he's still very solid defensively in the faceoff circle, but I think he's going to struggle a bit this week. And I don't think he's going to find his — I don't think he's going to score his first goal of the year.
Wow. So let's stick on the first goal of the year. Romanov scores his first goal this week in the NHL.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I'm going to love it. I'm going to be cheering the whole way.
I am also going to — my last hot take is there will be at least one shutout this week.
I need to push you on it, though. Which game?
There you go.
That's what I want.
Saturday in Toronto.
All right, my friend. Well, we will be with back you next week, and then I think we probably should talk about whether we're going to record a pod in a couple weeks, given the Canadians have most of the week off, just one game against Toronto. But we'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, sounds good. And for Super Bowl Sunday, before we go, I'm just going to say I'm picking – unfortunately, I think I'm going to pick the Buccaneers to win just because of the Chiefs' offensive line woes. It's not necessarily a Tom Brady thing, but I think the Buccaneers' defense will be able to harass Patrick Mahomes. And I don't like saying it because I don't like Tom Brady, but that offensive line's a big thing. So anyway, that's my Super Bowl pick.
I'm taking the Chiefs. I am
Giannis,
taking the
quickly.
Chiefs, and I'll tell you why. Mahomes – went to the dance last year and didn't play well, and he's the kind of player that's going to push back and going to be a dominant force, I believe, in the game later today. So I'm saying the Chiefs, and I'm saying by a touchdown.
Okay, I'm okay. I think my heart's with you, but my head's with the My head is with the Bucks because of the line issues, and I think it's going to be. Yeah, seven's probably a safe bet. So with that said, I'm Connor LaPont for y'all Hannes Wilden. Hope everyone enjoys the game, and hope everyone enjoys the hockey this week, and we'll see you next week.